Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and today we have a very special guest for you who is the creator of an extraordinary film, and it's called Magic Pills, and there's kind of a twist on that name. But her name is Ananda Moore. She joins us to talk about this project, her film, and also homeopathy and natural medicine in general. So welcome, Ananda, to the show. It's great to have you on.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me here.
And well, it's our pleasure. Thank you for taking the time. Now, let me give out your film website first here. It's magicpillsmovie.com. And just so that people aren't confused about the name, it's kind of mocking the criticism against homeopathy. Tell us about what's the film about and why the name Magic Pills?
Well, the film starts with exploring how mainstream media has shaped the narrative of homeopathy as something that's impossible, unscientific. And then I go on to explore some really large-scale campaigns around the world. We look at cancer treatment in India. We look at AIDS treatment in Africa. And we look at the use of homeopathy to stop epidemics in Cuba. And this was all done before COVID happened. So the film came out in 2017, actually. And I think had this knowledge been allowed to be disseminated, things could be a little bit different today.
Yeah, for sure. Also, COVID brought out the fact that apparently the entire scientific establishment, medical establishment, believes there's no such thing as an immune system either, not just homeopathy, but there's no immunity that's
right.
Natural. So they're kind of exposing themselves, aren't they, in all of this?
Yeah, I mean, I hate saying that the scientists believe this because I think the scientific community is so big. And now with cancel culture, we've canceled a lot of the science. Like, if you look at homeopathy and you actually look at the body of evidence done by top scientists working at top universities around the world, there's no way you could say, oh, that homeopathy doesn't work.
Yeah, so it's interesting to me how modern medicine, which is very material, right? It's very structural.
Mechanical.
And anything that they don't understand, they claim it doesn't exist, right? Which is just crazy. I mean, you know, I've read books like from Rupert Sheldrake, Morphic Resonance and so on, and that actually provides one of the explanations for why homeopathy does have effects. It does have physiological effects, as the science bears out. I mean, why do you think it's so difficult for people to get their hands around this? Is it just because they can't see it under a microscope or what?
Well, as my film shows, you can actually see it under the microscope.
Really?
Which is really cool. We look at how they're now finding nanoparticles of source material in really, really high potencies. And just to explain to the audience, the controversy around homeopathy is this idea that there's nothing in it because it's highly diluted and goes past Avogadro's number. So according to conventional science, there should be nothing left in that solution that we're giving as a medicine to someone.
Right.
But research has come out of IIT Bombay, the Institute for Technology in Bombay, shows that under electron microscopes, we can actually see source material in very high potencies of remedies, which brings up a lot of questions around our beliefs and how we understand things. Another aspect is, well, the reasons why I think it's so hard for allopathy to wrap its head around it in conventional science circles right now is because, one, it kind of changes our core belief, our core values, and flips everything on its head.
Right.
So now you're saying that the body isn't just mechanical. It isn't just a series of chemical reactions going on in the body. There's so much more to it. We're looking at the mental and emotional and the energetic state of a human being and how they're affected from an energetic perspective.
Absolutely.
And we're looking at how information can be transferred in ways and through energy and through water, which doesn't necessarily always make sense from the first conventional look. But if you look at quantum physics, you look at electromagnetic fields and how they affect the body, it makes absolute sense that homeopathy should be able to act.
You bring up some really critical points here. So I think one of the reasons the medical establishment doesn't want to acknowledge this influence over physiology that is imparted by homeopathy, is because then they might have to acknowledge 5G, electropollution, interference with human physiology, or, you know, high voltage power lines or what have you, all this electropollution that takes place. And yet, in my own research, I keep finding time and time again, there are so many examples that prove that there is this, what Sheldrake calls a morphic resonance, that is true. For example, I learned that the molecule known as xylitol, the alternative sweetener, xylitol used to be liquid at room temperature all over the world. And one day these crystals started to form at room temperature, and liquid xylitol became solid xylitol. And it did this simultaneously all over the world. And from that point forward, no one could make it liquid at room temperature. They'd have to make it hotter and melt it. And it was as if the crystals were sharing information about structure. And this was also true with other pharmaceuticals that were being manufactured by drug companies. And they had to reformulate their molecules because they began to crystallize all over the world at the same time. So that defies materialism right there.
Absolutely. Wow, that's new to me. Thank you for sharing that. I'm going to check that out. I also think another reason they don't want homeopathy to really enter the mainstream is because you can't patent it. You
right.
can replicate it very easily. You can make millions of doses from a tiny amount of material. And if it works, which I believe it does, and I think the science tells us it does, then the pharmaceutical industry can lose a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the most obvious reason why, journals don't want to publish information. They're reliant on pharmaceutical funding to maintain the medical journals going.
Yes.
Universities rely on pharmaceutical funding, so it's hard for students to be allowed to do research into homeopathy.
Absolutely.
And there's a whole institutional system in place that makes it very difficult to forward alternative medicine.
So I'm curious about what your film covered in terms of COVID. When was it just released or when was it released?
No, the film was released in 2017.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
So
well,
totally predates COVID.
Oh, wow. You're going to have to do a follow up.
Yes, I do. And, it's interesting because there's a few homeopathic organizations that came together and created databases to follow up on how patients with COVID were doing using just homeopathic medicine as treatment.
And
so there's a lot of
how did that go for them? I mean, are there in the homeopathic community, are there protocols that are accepted for maybe spike protein contamination or SARS-CoV-2?
Yeah, with homeopathy being highly individualized, we tend to take a patient at a time, but we've noticed certain patterns and we've seen that certain remedies tend to be effective. And then those change as the disease progresses or as I would even say the environmental influences change. So, homeopathy has been very effective in my eyes. And I think soon we're going to have all that data out there that we can mine and really see how it did. We have a lot of data around the 1918 flu pandemic, though, which shows homeopathy was very effective. And a lot of doctors at the time published their results, and they had very few deaths, like less than 10% deaths happening within the homeopathic community.
Compared to what percent of deaths outside of that? Any idea?
Oh, I can't remember right now, but it was very high. I think it was like 40%, 50%.
Wow.
So I can't look that up.
And I apologize that I didn't know this up front, but you are a homeopathic practitioner, right?
Yes.
And was it your practice that inspired you to make this film, or why did you want to even tackle something like this? It's a big project.
It's a huge project. I was at the beginning of my career, and there's that side of you that goes, damn, you know, homeopathy is really hard. It would be just so much easier to throw a drug at it. I want to know that what I'm doing is actually making a difference and really helping, or is there an easier way that I could help people? That was one side of things. And then I was attending a conference in Toronto, a homeopathic conference, and this immunologist from Cuba who works for a pharmaceutical company that specializes in vaccine production, Dr. Gustavo Bracho, who even has patents on vaccines himself. He did a huge study in Cuba using homeopathy as an intervention for an epidemic of a disease called leptospirosis. I know most people in North America and Canada and the U.S., maybe in Europe, don't really know what leptospirosis is, but in tropical countries, it's a very common illness, and it can kill, I think, around 10% of people who get it.
Wow.
And it's spread through water. So in places where there's a lot of hurricanes, I'm looking outside my window because I'm in Mexico and we get hurricanes where I'm at right now. It's a well-known disease. So And the Finley Institute, where Dr. Bracho worked, was the only place in the world that created a vaccine against leptospirosis for human use.
Okay.
So our animals in North America are all vaccinated for leptospirosis, but humans are not, and this is the only one in existence. So in 2007, they were hit by a terrible hurricane, and as it spread through water, people were exposed to water, and there were already elevated cases of leptospirosis that year in Cuba, and they were facing an epidemic. They were out of vaccine. They didn't have enough to go to the population. And on top of that, they know that you're not supposed to use a vaccine during an emergency situation, an epidemic. It takes two doses, I think 4 months to infer immunity. And so they started experimenting with homeopathy, and they decided to make a homeopathic remedy from the local variant of leptospirosis, and they got it out to over 2 million people.
Really? Okay, so then I'm sure he tracked the results, and where did that lead us?
Well, it definitely a huge reduction in leptospirosis cases. But where it gets really interesting is that the following year, so this intervention, to clarify, was only in 3 provinces of Cuba. And then the following year, hurricanes, it was the worst year on record for hurricanes. They hit the entire island. I think there were 3 hurricanes that came. And now they were able to trace leptospirosis numbers. They had a control area and they had the intervened area.
Right.
So in the controlled district, cases of leptospirosis went up by almost 30%. And in the control area, in the intervened area where they did the remedies, the cases of leptospirosis were down by 87%.
Oh my, that's a huge difference.
It's a huge difference.
So this treatment was inferring future immunity, I suppose. Is that the conclusion?
Yeah, so they did 2 years worth of remedies. So that first year, the first intervention during right after the hurricanes, they gave a 200 C potency, and then they came back the next year and gave people a 10M. And then they followed up to see how long that immunity would last. But they found that it started to wane, but they don't know if it was because the actual immunity was waning or because there was a change in population as like people come and go from a certain region.
And what did the treatment protocol consist of? How many doses?
One dose of 200 C. So
just
they gave
one
it
dose?
One dose, which is just these. They didn't do pellets there. They did liquids. So they just came. They went around from workplace to workplace, from school to school, asked people if they wanted to participate, told them that it was what it was, that it's safe, it's completely non-toxic, what it was hoped it would do. And they gave people a little dose at work, and then they followed up a year later with a dose of a higher potency. And that was that.
Just 2 doses spread out.
2 doses. And it doesn't need refrigeration. It doesn't.
Right.
It's so much simpler and more affordable to disperse to a large community.
And it doesn't contain mysterious nanoparticles of unknown origin. Right. So who knows what's in those?
There's no graphene.
Right, exactly. So this, obviously, homeopathy would revolutionize medicine if it were fully embraced. But as you say, there's not a big profit model in it. And it could make obsolete a huge assortment of high profit prescription medications right now. And then combined with other forms of alternative medicine as well. I mean, homeopathy has its limitations and its applications, but there are other forms that can come in and do amazing things as well. So no wonder no one, no wonder the establishment doesn't want anyone to see the film.
Yeah, it was even hard to get funding to make the film. I ended up having to fund from the community itself and do crowdsourcing. But it was interesting how hard it was to get into festivals. I had a few festivals around the world that it did play at, but the programmers came to me and told me they were scared to air this film.
No kidding. Well, I'm not surprised. I mean, part of the so-called consensus of mainstream science is to be the gatekeepers and make sure there is no debate on issues like homeopathy. And the way they achieve that is by silencing voices like yours.
Yes, basically. And like yours.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, you don't have to tell me about it. Yeah. But tell our audience, though, what are they going to learn in your film?
Okay, so one is exactly what you just talked about, was the media and how they misportray what is actually happening in real life. I had some very significant magazines from Canada interview me on homeopathy. I treat a lot of vaccine injury in my practice, and they discovered me by talking to people who claimed that vaccines had caused their problems. And so they came, interviewed me, and then they just right out lied about all the research I gave them. They said
course.
It hadn't been published in peer-reviewed journals. And so I confronted them, and they said, well, you know, that's the format and how we work.
Yeah.
And that was their excuse.
Right. No, they come to you and they say they want to hear your side of the story, but they're actually just planning a hit piece full of lies.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And then we followed a hit piece that they did on CBC in Canada, on a show called Marketplace. And that sets us on an exploration of what is really going on in the world and how is homeopathy actually affecting people's lives, and is there any solid evidence to support its use? So I go to Africa, to Tanzania, where there's an organization called Homeopathy for AIDS in Africa, for health, sorry, and they work with AIDS, Homeopathy for Health in Africa, and they work a lot with AIDS patients. And we look at the successes they've had. The problems in a place like Tanzania is that there aren't many lines available of care and of drugs for those with AIDS. So there aren't a lot of recourses available for these people. Yeah. And most half the time they can't even get to the town they need to be to get their prescriptions filled, that sort of thing. So along comes homeopathy for health in Africa, and they go to villages to where no medical practitioners come. They set up at hospitals, they work in conjunction with hospitals, and they start giving people homeopathy and they get better. And now the hospitals get really interested and they start participating and they start learning about, the doctors start learning about homeopathy. It's quite fascinating, actually.
Yeah, and that's a really important point, that homeopathy allows people in developing nations, many impoverished people around the world, to be able to connect with effective and safe medicine without relying on the central control of Western nations. So you know how in the United States, sometimes drug companies like to say, oh, we're donating, you know, because we're such good companies, we're donating, you know, 50,000 bottles of this to Africa. And usually it's stuff that's expired, by the way. But if you really had compassion, you would teach people in Africa, like you're doing, about homeopathy and about self-reliance. I mean, they can do their own homeopathy. They can learn to, you know, grow their own food and not depend on Western food supplies and so on. I mean, real compassion is teaching people to not need the centralized system.
Yeah. To be self-reliant.
That's right.
And that's what's amazing about homeopathy. Like, I teach an online course helping people to become medically self-reliant. And there's so much that you can address at home easily with homeopathy, and you don't need to go to the doctor for every little thing. I mean, there are obviously times when it's absolutely the right thing to do, but you can do so much to exit the system and the medical system using alternative medicines.
Let me ask you this question, Anand. I mean, thank you for answering that, but here's something that often concerns me about the way patients attempt to interact with alternative medicine or complementary medicine. And I'm sure you've seen this in your practice. So patients bring an allopathic mindset often to a homeopathic practitioner, right? They say, oh, I have this symptom, you know, doctor, cure me with something so that I, the patient, don't have to take any responsibility in my own health. You see that?
Yes. Oh, for sure. People come in, they're looking for a drug. They're looking right. for a medication that's going to make their symptoms just magically disappear. What's cool about homeopathy is we don't just address the one symptom, though we can, and often it works well that way, not always. But we look at the whole person. So what's important to us is how they think, how they feel, how they respond to times of stress. Why is their body reacting in this way? And what are their patterns and how their body reacts? We could have 10 people with the same flu and they all have slightly different symptoms and they're all going to need a slightly different remedy.
Right.
So it's, as you said, it's individualized. And then people think I just go once, I get my medicine and I leave and I should be fine. But it also doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way with Western medicine all the time either.
Right. Exactly. Well, and so here's a follow-up question. Sometimes people may have, let's say, a vitamin D deficiency, right? Or a vitamin C deficiency. You know, if a patient presents with something like scurvy or rickets, then, you know, there's something where a macro molecule, let's say, you know, a really big giant molecule compared to, you know, the quantum level, is really what they need. And do you ever say to somebody like, oh, I looked at all your symptoms and, you know, guess what? You should clean up your food, your diet first. And then we can deal with even more subtle energies and so on. Is that ever part of the practice?
For me, it is. We study a lot of nutrition, and like half the work is nutrition, really.
Oh, really? Wow.
I think so for me, especially I used to live in Canada and you'd see that everyone has a vitamin D deficiency.
Yeah.
You know, people really need to change their eating habits. And what people think is eating healthy isn't always.
That's the truth.
Correct. I've had patients come in and be like, well, I have a hot chocolate for lunch and a muffin. I think I'm eating really well.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Oh my goodness.
So definitely educating people on nutrition, the building blocks of our body. But homeopathy can still work. One of the stories I looked at in the film was the Banerjee Clinic in Calcutta in India. And there they treat a lot of cancer.
Is that right?
They don't touch nutrition at all with their patients. Huh. I've asked them about this.
Wow.
And people still get better. So, I mean, I think nutrition is extremely important. I'm right now being in Mexico. I have to bring my supplements from the States. Not everything's available here. I definitely think they're important. But I've also seen homeopathy work despite bad nutrition.
Well, and it's, you know, the whole person, as you well know, exists at many layers, right? There's the physical body layer, the physiology layer, the functional layer, and then mind and spirit, and maybe other, you know, other interpretations of those layers. There's an energetic lattice that exists upon which the frame of the physical matter is hanging, it seems. And then there's the mind-body interaction and intention and divinity and all of that stuff. And it seems to me like homeopathy is able to tap into those multiple layers in a way that simple, you know, kinetic surgery or pharmaceuticals just cannot tap into. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, for example, we have remedies that can help you better absorb the nutrition that you are getting. Sorry, I'm going back to that. But yeah, like we really think on the energetic plane. How is that person, like, what is that person's perspective on life? And that will address a remedy that we're going to give.
Yes.
What scares that person? What level are they at? Are they in a spiritual plane where they're really focused on the salvation of their soul? Or are they really focused on work? Or are they focused on artistic development? All those things, like where that person is at in terms of their development, leads us towards a type of prescription for them.
So a homeopathic practitioner is also, in a way, an artist, right?
It's not easy.
Yeah, there's clearly some level of intuition that's required. I mean, I know there's a lot of evidence and history with other patients, mm-hmm. and things like that. But isn't there also something more, where if you get a sense from someone of what they're challenged by, that could alter or enhance what you're recommending?
Yeah, so there are different layers or levels of prescribing. One is you can prescribe on the very physical level. Oh, you've got a hurt ankle, it hurts worse in the morning when you first start moving it warms up, you start to feel better. That'll give me an idea for a remedy like Restox right away. So I don't have to go too deep. But for really deep healing, to change that constitution of the person that's keeping them stuck in patterns that reflect physically, emotionally, and energetically, you need to go deeper. And there is a lot of intuition involved, and that's where having a really good homeopath can make a difference. I think a lot of homeopaths aren't as well trained as we'd like. Maybe they have a good grasp of the mechanical side of homeopathy, where a lot of our research is based. But for that really deep transformational work, I think you need a really experienced homeopath.
That makes perfect sense. And I'm glad you brought this up, because I've noticed this too in all my years, that often the physical symptoms that present in someone are really the last in a chain of events that has started often with emotional trauma, an event of shame, sometimes parent-child relationships, many other relationships, or people who've been subjected to real trauma, like a veteran who saw some crazy things happening. And then over time, that mental or emotional state then gets materialized into the physiology of the body, and then that becomes symptoms. But it all started from this other crisis event, right? Sometimes.
Yeah. I think most of the time it started from a crisis event, unless it's even a clear injury. Like, I think even injuries can come along when there's something going on in your life and they're trying to, the universe is trying to tell you something, send you a message.
Yes.
So I think you can address almost all illness from that level. And by paying attention and focusing. But that's exactly what makes homeopathy difficult, is the never well since. Where is the foundation of this based? And how can I get to that point in time? Maybe it was at 3 years old, their sister got a bigger slice of the cake.
Right.
And they've internalized that, and that's leading to a new perspective on life. I'm not loved. I don't get the big slice of cake. It can be that small, or like you said, it can be trauma. I've had patients who've been tortured. I've had a patient, who heard a few bad words from their parents and that traumatized them. Everyone's very different as to what level of trauma they can handle or right. how they interpret things in their life.
So is there a homeopathic organization that you recommend that people can go to if they want to find a practitioner local to them?
There is one is Americans for Homeopathy Choice, and their website is homeopathychoice.org.
Okay.
So I believe they can hook you up with a local homeopath, but they're also an incredible advocacy group, and they've worked with government, and they've tried to work with the FDA to ensure that homeopathy stays around in the United States.
Yeah.
So I'd recommend everyone to go there. And I'm just blocking out the name of the organization that I love. I'm just going to look it up.
Yeah, just look it up. No, I'm showing the website here, Americans for Homeopathy Choice.
Yeah.
So that's great. Kind of a health freedom site. And it would just be horrible if the FDA tried to outlaw homeopathy. Now, I know they've been sort of at war with it for many years, but what's the current status in the minds of the FDA for homeopathy?
Ooh, it's not very good. The FDA has, in the past few years, they put out a document, a draft guidance document on how homeopathy should be addressed, and they've just decided to not keep it in draft form. So it's now become official documentation for the FDA. They've decided that homeopathy is now needs to be considered a new drug and is now unapproved. So they are free to start taking remedies off the shelf.
Well, that's crazy. How can they claim it's a drug when they say there's nothing in it?
Right?
Right.
And the history of homeopathy is really interesting. Royal Copeland, who was a senator who helped bring in the FDA, he was the one who brought in the Food, Drug, and Cosmetics Act. And he was a senator in New York, and he was a medical doctor as well and a homeopath. And he brought in the FDA, as they were creating the regulatory framework for the FDA, they brought homeopathy in because he wanted to protect homeopathy. Uh-huh. There are all these substances or all these medicines being labeled as homeopathic when they weren't, and they were causing harm.
Oh, wow.
So he wanted to make sure this wasn't happening anymore, and he brought homeopathy in under the umbrella of the FDA. It's always been thought of as grass, generally regarded as safe. And it's that's not what the FDA was put in place to govern, really.
Right.
They're there to protect people from harmful and toxic substances. And homeopathy is by its nature inherently non-toxic.
That's right.
So asking homeopathic medications to go through a drug approval process, which is looking at the toxicity and the potential harm of a medication, is ridiculous, and it's also more expensive than any homeopathic pharmaceutical could afford in the States.
Of course, but I think also after COVID, more and more people, especially Americans, realize that the FDA is corrupt, that it is an extension of Big Pharma, and that the FDA routinely makes decisions, regulatory decisions, in the interests of pharmaceutical companies rather than the safety or the health of the American people. The FDA is one of the agencies that, in fact, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. wants to completely gut if he becomes president, which I agree with. I mean, gut the NIH, the FDA, the CDC, fire them all, start over, and do it differently. You know, why should food and drugs be under the same roof anyway?
No, exactly. And, you know, we get that revolving door between the FDA and pharmaceutical companies. It's the same people working for both areas, and the FDA is mostly funded by pharmaceutical money.
That's right. That's right. Talk about conflicts of interest.
Right.
But again, this is in many ways a tipping point or a turning point, I think, in the minds of the American people. And the nice thing about homeopathy also is that, you know, they last a while. I don't know what the official shelf life is, but you know, you can get them and they last. Well, what are your comments on that in terms of shelf life?
We have remedies from Hahnemann's time, the founder of homeopathy. We have his remedies still extant in Germany. I got to see the kit that he made himself.
Wow.
They're still effective. So technically, they really shouldn't have an expiration date unless they're in a liquid, because then it can, obviously, bacteria can start growing in it and taint it over a few years. But yeah, technically they shouldn't have a shelf life. If they're exposed, we do have research that shows that they're exposed to microwave radiation. It can, it can make them useless, but they're not going to hurt you.
Right. So this is something that could be part of everybody's, you know, medical kit. And I know it is for many people. I think Arnica, by the way, is probably the most common one that people know about for pain relief and inflammation and so on. But what are some of the other more popular homeopathic remedies that people should pay attention to?
Mm-hmm. A really big one for me is arsenic amalgam. And I think that one tends to scare people because it has the word arsenic in it.
Right.
But it, as we said, it's highly diluted. It contains no arsenic in it, maybe a few nanoparticles of arsenic. But it was a great remedy during COVID. It's a great remedy for colds, flus, allergies, asthma, stomach issues. That's one of the remedies I go through the most.
Really?
No kidding. Here at home. Huh. Calendula.
Yes.
So calendula is also used herbally, but it's an incredible remedy for healing tissue. There's so many remedies. We've got thousands and thousands of them.
Yeah.
But What else am I really?
Aside from watching your film, then what's the best online resource that you recommend for people to just learn more about homeopathy and look up remedies, things like that?
So the internet is the most incredible pharmacopoeia. So you just type in the name of a remedy that you're looking for, or you type in homeopathy for blank, and a lot of things will come up.
Okay.
And that, to learn more about homeopathy, I definitely recommend people take courses, read books. There's a lot out there. So one of the main resources in the United States is the National Center for Homeopathy. There are a lot of resources on there.
Okay.
And they also list out different homeopaths in your area. They hold conferences, they do courses. In the UK, For Homeopathy, or 4-H, is a really good organization as well.
Okay.
And those are two key resources. To learn about research, I highly recommend the Homeopathic Research Institute. They're based out of the UK.
Okay, excellent.
And there are infinite numbers of resources online. There's so much for people to access.
Well, this is great.
There are mom groups out there too. So moms who have really embraced homeopathy, they learn together, they study, they support each other when one of the kids is sick. So I had a lot of groups on Facebook, for example, where people are doing this. So all it takes is some basic initial research, and you have a whole world at your fingertips.
All right, perfect. And in the meantime, folks, if you want to check out the film, it's called Magic Pills, and the website for that is magicpillsmovie.com, and it looks like you can stream it for, you know, under $5 here and watch the film and help support Ananda Moore in her efforts. Ananda, really appreciate you joining us today. This has been fascinating. It only scratches the surface, obviously. I hope we can talk with you again, but I really want to thank you for taking the time today.
Thanks so much, Mike. I really appreciate you bringing me on, and be happy to come and chat about everything that's happening in this world. Anytime.
Well, I have a feeling we'll need you back on, because there's something else probably that's gonna hit humanity, you know, the next pandemic. Mm-hmm. So let's make a note to get you on, talk about that, maybe save some lives and empower some people with some things. So we'll set a date for that. I'll have my producers reach out to you. But
sounds good. And thank you for considering homeopathy, because very few people think about it as an option and as something that we need to be discussing in these times.
Well, yeah, I don't know what to say about that. But, you know, small minds don't have a great future. I think we have to have a big cosmic view of who we are, you know, where we are in the history of human civilization, the things that have yet to be fully understood. And, you know, homeopathy is one of them. But it's also an ancient technology that's been with us for, you know, I don't know, since the dawn of human civilization. So why not look at it? I mean, we don't have to understand how every molecule works. Not everything is chemistry. I mean, most of our reality is not chemistry. It's actually mind and soul. But anyway, we can talk about that in more detail next time.
Sounds great. Thanks so much.
You bet. Great to have you on. And thank all of you for watching. I'm Mike Adams of Brighteon.com. And as always, you can repost this interview. And also, if you haven't yet looked into homeopathy, do yourself a favor, check it out. Try some of the remedies. They're incredibly safe, non-toxic, as Ananda told us here in the interview. And that's absolutely true. And, you know, I've used homeopathic remedies for decades. I mean, it's just been part of my kit for a long time. But check it out, and thank you for watching today. Feel free to repost this interview on other channels if you'd like to, and take care of your health. We'll talk again soon. Hope you enjoyed this. Today's interview is brought to you by healthrangerstore.com, where we have, of course, lab tested almost all certified organic products for health, nutrition, for personal care, for home care. If you take a look at healthrangerstore.com, you can see here we've got turmeric gold plus, detox foot pads, colloidal silver nasal spray, organic elderberry and echinacea extract. This is the one that was formulated by Dr. Ed Group. It's really amazing. We have non-fluoride toothpaste alternatives. This is an amazing toothpaste product that I helped formulate, aloe vera extract powder. So much more, really hundreds of products. Freeze-dried organic blueberry powder. This is very high in anthocyanins. Just amazing. If you check out the full product line, you'll be blown away by what we have available right now at healthrangerstore.com. And every purchase helps support this platform and our desire to bring you the truth, to bring you fascinating guests, information that can help you prepare for the madness of the world that seems to have consumed our planet at the moment. My goodness, you're going to need health and nutrition to make it through everything that's coming, because where we are right now is only the beginning. So we appreciate your support. HealthRangerStore.com. Take care.